Although the French eventually took Offenbach to their hearts as their own, he was originally German, born in Cologne in 1819. His father, a cantor and violinist, brought him to Paris in his mid-teens. He was a cellist, and his father wanted him trained at the Conservatoire. They didn't normally take foreign students there, but the director, Luigi Cherubini, made an exception, since the young Offenbach's playing was so outstanding. He didn't stay long at the Conservatoire. Instead, he began playing in the Opéra Comique Orchestra, supplementing his income by performing as a soloist in the salons of fashionable homes. But he was eager to get ahead as a composer. He'd already had his first operetta produced by the time he became a conductor at the Théâtre Français in 1850. He composed for other theaters, but his satirical style wasn't always welcomed. He finally decided to start his own company, renting a little theater originally called the Salle Lacaze. He renamed it literally Parisian Farces, Bouffe Parisien. And there he achieved one triumph after another. Offenbach would produce nearly 100 operettas over the next quarter century, making him the toast of Paris, the man Rossini referred to as the Mozart of the Champs-Élysées. Among the most captivating of the full-length pieces were Orfeo's Enfer, La Belle Hélène, La Vie Parisienne, La Grande Duchesse de Gerolstein, and La Pericole. There were also one-act farces and musical revues. Everything showed a glorious gift for melody and a biting wit that none of Offenbach's peers could match. By the late 1870s, the vogue for operetta wasn't quite what it had been. Tastes were starting to change in Paris. Also, due to serious gout, Offenbach's health was starting to deteriorate. His previous triumphs weren't enough for him. He longed to write the operatic masterpiece he felt would give his name an enduring importance in the musical world. As early as 1851, he'd seen a play, Les Contes Fantastiques d'Hoffmann, The Fantastic Tales of Hoffmann, by two notable writers, Jules Barbier and Michel Carré, who'd also collaborated on opera libretti. Years later, when Offenbach was considering dramatic sources for a full-length, serious opera, he realized that the Barbier-Carré play would be ideal for him. The Opéra Comique agreed to produce the new piece, Barbier prepared a libretto, and Offenbach began work, although with constant interruptions. He was having financial problems, and when circumstances required it, he was able to make the money he needed by dashing off a new operetta in record time. Well, time was running out for him, and he knew it. He managed to finish a Hoffmann piano score. He orchestrated the prologue and the first act, but that was all. After he died in October of 1880, the orchestration was completed by Ernest Guiraud, the composer who became famous for writing recitatives for Carmen after the death of Bizet. Before the piece was produced, Hoffmann's spoken dialogue was changed to recitatives. The head of the Opéra Comique wanted it that way. This made the opera enormously long, so at the premiere, the whole Giulietta act was cut. Hoffmann finally premiered on February 10, 1881. It was a great success, running for 100 performances. From the start, producers have been altering Hoffmann. The most frequently performed version is the one published by Schudanz in 1907. It includes the major changes that were created for a Monte Carlo production in 1904. With one exception, the synopsis and music I'll give you in this commentary relates directly to the Schudanz edition. The poet of the opera's title is very loosely based on a real-life figure, E.T.A. Hoffmann, who lived from 1776 to 1822. He was a real Renaissance man, a writer, composer, music critic, jurist, draftsman, and caricaturist. But he's best remembered as the creator of fabulous stories. Their wild imagination pointed the way to many great fiction writers of the German Romantic era. The opera's prologue finds us in Luther's tavern in Nuremberg. It's evening, and the stage is lit by moonlight. Suddenly, offstage voices are heard, the spirits of wine and beer, singing glu, 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 we're the friends of men, and we drive away dull cares. This is a quiet, rather gentle way to begin the opera, highly atmospheric and somewhat mysterious.
Thank you.
Councillor Lindorf appears. He's the first of the opera's four villains. Whenever any of the four makes an entrance, we hear this sinister, rather creepy theme in the low strings. Lindorf has with him Andres, the servant of Stella. She's the diva who's performing that night in Don Giovanni. It seems she's recently arrived from Milan with a bunch of lovers in pursuit. When Lindorf questions Andres about Stella's doings, he responds with little more than oui and non. Andres has a note for one particular lover. Lindorf bribes him in exchange for the note. Once Lindorf is alone, he reads it. There's a key enclosed, a key that will let Stella's lover into her dressing room. Lindorf sings his two-verse solo. Most of this opera's arias are in two verses, as arias frequently were in Offenbach's operettas. Lindorf explains how uncomfortable he feels playing a languishing lover, but there's a devil lurking in him that lets him triumph through fear. He knows Stella doesn't love him, but still he anticipates that he's the one who will be entering that dressing room. He concludes, "Je suis vieux, mais je suis vif," which is basically, "I'm old, but I've still got some life in me." At the premiere of Hoffmann, the baritone Émile-Alexandre Tasquin created Lindorf, as well as the villains of the Olympia Act and the Antonia Act. No doubt he would have created the villain of the Giulietta Act as well if that portion of the opera hadn't been cut. Clearly, Offenbach wanted one singer to play all the villains, which is usually the case in Hoffmann productions today. Lindorf needs quite a light touch for this aria, but at the same time, he's got to dig into the words. You need real bite in the voice, but elegance, too. And that goes for the music for the other three villains.
Dans le rôle d'amour, l'amour, je sais que je suis pitoyable, mais j'ai de l'esprit comme un diable, comme un diable. Mes yeux lancent des éclairs, j'ai dans tout le physique, j'ai dans tout le physique, un aspect satanique qui bondit sur le nerf et fait d'une pile électrique. Par le nerf, j'arrive au cœur, je triomphe par la peur.
Lindorf knows exactly who his rival for Stella is. It's Hoffmann, the poet. And he knows that Hoffmann will soon be at the tavern with his friends, whom Lindorf considers young lunatics. The waiters are ready, the doors open, and in comes a group of boisterous young students calling for Luther, the tavern keeper, to bring beer and wine. There's a very lively drinking song. The refrain says, "Keep filling the pewter tankards until morning." It's one of this opera's most exhilarating numbers, perfect for communicating the youth and vigor of this gang of students. The students have come from the Don Giovanni performance. They heard Act One, in which Stella was apparently singing gloriously. One student, Nathanael, drinks a toast to her. Hoffmann now arrives, looking rather grim, and asking for a stool, a glass, and a pipe. Behind him is his friend Niklaus, who also intends to drink and smoke. Hoffmann's suspicious of Lindorf, who's there quietly observing him. He unnerves Hoffmann. And clearly the poet is feeling morose anyway, but his mood changes when one of the students suggests that he tell the story of Kleinsach. "Right, Kleinsach it is," declares Hoffmann, and he's off and running. At the court of Eisenach, Hoffmann tells his friends, there was a little runt of a person named Kleinsach. His legs went click-clack when he walked, he had a hump in place of a stomach, and his feet seemed to emerge as if from out of a sack. In this bit of the aria, you see that vocal beauty isn't really the point. The point is to be an effective storyteller and for the voice really to crackle with energy. Just as Hoffmann's about to start the third verse of the song, where he's going to describe Kleinsach's face, suddenly he thinks of a different face. The face of the young woman that he raced after one day, running through valleys and woods. He remembers her voice, her eyes, everything about her. And as he sings, the music changes radically into something overtly and overwhelmingly romantic. Comme le jour où courant après elle, je quittais comme un fou la maison paternelle et m'enfuis à travers les vallons et les loups. Ses cheveux en torsade sombre, sur son corps il y mange de la chose sombre, ses yeux enveloppés d'azur. Promenait tout autour d'elle un regard frais et pur, et comme notre char emporte sans secousse nos cœurs et nos amours, sa voix vibrante et douce. Aux yeux qui l'écoutaient, j'étais ce chaque. Finally, Hoffmann pulls himself out of this reverie, and he goes back to describing the misshapen Kleinsach and the way his coattails went flick-flack. Now Hoffmann stirs everyone up by shouting, "Let's get drunk!" He confronts Lindorf, whom he and his friends kid mercilessly. He calls Lindorf the devil. The two of them exchange sarcastic insults, but elegantly. The music is light here. The jaunty middle section of this excerpt is absolutely typical of Offenbach, the operetta composer.
C'est donc si la chose vraie que vous en buvez, cher pot.
Si je la bois, je la peux, cher orateur de tripot.
Avec l'argent comme moi-même, vous me folie, cher vautour.
Admettons que mon rêve soit volable, cher amour.
Ah, madame, profane, cher suppôt de Lucifer.
Que l'amour sur vos mâmes, cher échappé de l'enfer.
Cher suppôt de Lucifer.
Hoffmann continues to be distressed being in the presence of Lindorf, who he thinks brings him bad luck. Whether he gambles, whether he falls in love. But that's nothing, interrupts Nathanael. All of us are unlucky in love. Again, Hoffmann's sarcastic, mocking the women his friends are in love with. Is your mistress such a treasure? Asks Hermann, another student. Hoffmann remarks to himself that Stella is actually three women in one. But then aloud, he says that he's actually had three mistresses. And now he's offering to tell everyone their stories. Luther announces that Act Two of Don Giovanni is about to start, but no one cares. They settle down to listen as Hoffmann begins, "The name of the first one was Olympia." So ends the prologue.